conversation in the area, in the state, in the Midwest, and in the baseball world has been surrounding the St. Louis Cardinals and the fact that they have not been the Cardinals as we know them. 12 games under 500, not playing very well down here with the Springfield Cardinals. Of course, it's constant conversation. So to determine what the circumstances are and whether or not there's any causative agent involved, we've gone to the source who always is. Although I doubt, Rob, that you're writing any books on the Cardinals' legends of this year's team.
Well, let's figure this out. You got a comic book edition we could bring out. You got a Mysteries of the Universe edition we could bring out. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go with this thing.
In the sense that you do make a very good point. Now, were you there for yesterday's game?
I was.
Okay, you're suffering through an eighth inning in which De La Cruz gets a leadoff walk, goes second to pass ball, third on an infield out, I think it was, and then scores on a grounder that doesn't even leave the infield. How do you explain the fates and fortunes that are going on?
One of those wacky years. Yeah. I really don't think there's an explanation for it. I mean, it's one of those, I still think this is a good team. I thought until about a week ago, they still predicted they were going to win the division. I mean, hopefully in their case, because it's not a good division, it's not like they're chasing down, Tampa Bay or the Dodgers or somebody, then he would say no. But I mean, just the way things have gone over the last week or so, I just kind of now come to the realization I don't think it's going to happen. And I don't know why. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I think, the Cardinals have been baffled by it. I think the fans have been baffled by it. I think, there's probably multiple layers of reasons behind it that you can think of. It just seems like everything that they've tried to do hasn't worked. This is a bottom line denominator like that. And I just like yesterday, I mean, it's like our one inning, it's a microcosm of the first 66 games of the season or whatever it is, but they're just little things that, on the surface, one by itself is not going to be a big deal, but then you put three of them together and it's a run and you lose the game by one run. I mean, that's just the way things have been going. I mean, I always said it, yesterday, so they pretty much got to be perfect to win. And right now, and we all know that when, the first thing that happens when you try to be perfect is you make a mistake. So you just, you can't just, baseball is one of those weird sports that you just have to go play. You just have to not think. I mean, I know there was one former Cardinal manager who we all know well who said one time it was one of the star players, the worst thing he could do out there is think. So, you just got to react. Baseball is just a reaction sport. You know what I mean? So I think that's what they've got to try to figure out is how to just forget about everything that's happening. And it's hard to do that. It's just you can't really think about what's going wrong when you try to do something right.
How would you describe right now, and you go down to the clubhouse and visit with these guys, how would you describe the overall tenor of that clubhouse?
Frustrated, mm-hmm. Confused. I mean, I think it's the same thing. I mean, they don't have the answers either. I mean, you keep, what's the definition of insanity? You keep doing the same thing and expect different results. So I think that's why they're frustrated too, is that they know they're better players than this, but it's just one of those teams that where it seems like the individual parts are great, or, the sum of the parts is not as great as the parts, but the parts are greater than the sum, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Whereas, some years the sum of the team is greater than the parts, but this year is not that case. It's just the individual players are better than the way they're performing. I mean, they've got holes in the lineup. They've got, injuries have been a factor that, early on the starting pitching was bad. Now the bullpen's bad. They don't seem to hit when it matters with the runner scoring position. It was getting yesterday, they scored three runs the first three innings and had two hits the rest of the game. That just seems to happen day after day after day.
Listen to Rob Raines of STLSportsPage.com. Hey, Rob, how much of this falls on Marmol in your eyes?
Hard to say. I mean, I think there's questions I have about bullpen usage. Like, where was Ryan Helsley this weekend? I don't think he touched the baseball all weekend. Now, maybe he had an injury that he's dealing with that we don't know about. I don't know. But it just, it seems like he's got two or three kind of guys that he goes to repeatedly, night after night after night in the bullpen, and there's other guys that don't touch the ball for a week. So I think sometimes I question a little bit the bullpen usage. And as I say, I mean, that's from a 360-degree view or 30,000-foot view. There may be something that somebody's dealing with that we're not privy to, which affects that decision. But the lineup, I guess the one thing I have a concern about too is that it just seems like they're not flexible about the lineup. I mean, I'd get Contreras out of the fifth spot. I mean, I know that they, paid him a lot of money. I know that they expect him to be the guy, but if you're not the guy, why do you, again, keep expecting the same results, all of a sudden to turn around? drop him down a couple spots in the order. Then if he starts getting hot, then move him back up. So, and I also don't understand their reluctance to move Walker up in the lineup. I just, you know, Luke and Baker comes up, plays two games in the big league, he's batting cleanup. And Walker can't sniff hitting seventh. You know, so I just, those kind of things confuse me.
Is there something there with Walker and Marmol? Or, because, I mean, does he look any different? Jordan Walker having been down and, you know, they were going to correct some things. It seems like to me he has some pretty darn good at-bats just about every time he steps in the box.
Yeah, I think I noticed yesterday the one thing I was impressed by is that I think when I looked up, when he struck out whatever inning it was, when he struck out the fifth inning, sixth inning, something like that, yesterday I looked it up and it was only his second strikeout since he's been back up. So over a week. So that to me was an impressive performance. So I think he's a little bit different player. I mean, I think, you know, they mishandled that situation from the get-go. You know, I mean, if they weren't committed to him beyond 3 weeks, he should never have started the season in the big league roster. Let him start the year in AAA, get his feet under his ground for a month, and then bring him up. So I think that trickle-down effect took a while. But I think he's older than that now, and I think he's certainly, you know, playing better. I don't understand why they won't let him DH some also, because I think that there's, you know, we did it with Gorman last year. I mean, just because you when it's one in a new position and you know, trying to make adjustments to the big league level, it's like I think back to last year at Springfield, you know, when we all knew that Walker eventually was going to move to the outfield, but they kept him at playing third base until, you know, the trade deadline was over August 1st and then moved him to the outfield. And the explanation at that time was, well, he's trying to learn, you know, we want to be comfortable hitting. Well, if that works at Double A, wouldn't it work at the big leagues? You know, wouldn't you let it be comfortable hitting first and then worry about the position? Because it's not like he still couldn't get an hour and a half of work every game or day before the game with Willie McGee in the outfield. You know, learning the nuances of the position and getting better and getting instruction and getting advice. And let me play out some, but just because a kid with DH now at this level doesn't mean you're labeling him a DH for the rest of his career. So there's some of those things just make me kind of wonder.
Rob, we in the media and, of course, the fans all talk about the chemistry and leadership in the clubhouse and so forth. Do you see that occurring with this team? Is there a leader?
Adam Wainwright's the leader, but it's tough for a starting pitcher to be a real leader of a team because he, you know, pitches one every 5 days. I mean, Goldschmidt is a leader, but he's not a vocal guy. You know, he doesn't flip tables or, you know, start yelling at his teammates or whatever. You know, I mean, he's a quiet guy. I mean, people definitely look up to him and value his leadership and value his input, but I don't think he's going to be a, you know, the real vocal guy. You know, I mean, Yadi and Pujols were the two guys that kind of ran this team last year, and, you know, obviously their presence or absence is definitely noted this year, but you know, I think they've got guys, veteran guys. Arenado's a veteran guy that, you know, stands up, and a lot of guys look up to him and talk to him for advice too. But again, he may be a little more vocal than Goldschmidt, but he's still not a, you know, what you would call a traditional, you know, captain kind of type of the team. I mean, Andrew Kisner is actually the more vocal guy on the bench and kind of leading the extra guys a little bit. So, but again, it's hard for a bench guy, I think, like he is a position, like a starting pitcher, to be the real leader of the team. But, you know, what goes on in the clubhouse other than the hour that we're in the clubhouse before the game or, you know, that kind of stuff, it's hard to say. You know, we're not on the dugout. We're not in the back rooms behind closed doors. So what exactly happens back there and is said back there and the feelings these guys have for the teammates and stuff, it's just really hard to know.
You know, Cardinal fans get excited about Jordan Walker, and rightfully so, at 21 years old. But tell us what you saw out of Ellie De La Cruz over the weekend, also 21-year-old, that power and speed. Reds fans got a reason to actually come to ball games again now, don't they?
I had to bet on somebody to win a race. I think I'd bet on him. Darn guy's fast. I'll say that for him. Yeah, and he unloads it. The guy was safe, but probably unleashed a throw from behind the infield yesterday, like 96 miles an hour, kind of like look at Mason Wynn out there, except he's about 8 inches taller than Mason, I think. He's going to be a really good, exciting young player, and it's good for the Reds. I mean, I think it's good for baseball that the Reds get better. I think it's good that the Pirates get better. You know, those teams have been bad for so long that you know, you want your fans in their town some excitement too, and it just makes for better baseball. And, you know, I think the one thing that maybe people forget about with the Cardinals' relationship to the Pirates and the Reds and both of them getting better is that, you know, it's a different race this year because of the balanced schedule. It's changed everything. You know, the Cardinals feasted last year and got a lot, you know, got to 90 wins. Now they got to 90 wins because they beat up on the Pirates and the Reds and the Cubs and had a lot of games against them. Well, they lost some of those games against those teams this year to start with because they went through the balanced schedule. And then, number one, those other teams got better. So So, you know, all of a sudden trying to get to 90 wins is not as easy as it was last year. And I think that's been a factor too.
Rob, do you think part of the reason that people have been jumping off bridges in St. Louis over this this star 12 games below 500 is the fact that it's the Pirates that are leading the division, you know, and a game back are the Brewers, who clearly aren't the don't have the offensive punch they've had. They've had injuries. Is it just kind of a maybe a, well, there's still hope because it's the Pirates and the Brewers leading the division?
Well, I had hope up until about a week ago. I mean, I think you could still build a case that there's hope. And there's, what, 90-something games to go, and you're 8.5 games, I think it is, out of the division. So, you know, you don't look at the 12 games under 500, really. You look at how far back you are in the division. And, okay, even if you have five teams ahead of you, that's still 8.5 games. It's not, you know, one good week by your team and one bad week by that team, and that gap closes significantly. But as I say, you've lost some of that ability. Like, they don't play the Reds again now until September 8th. They don't play the Pirates again, I think, maybe one more time until September. So, I mean, they've lost those games that they have a chance to beat those teams head-to-head and move up quicker in the standings. So that's what I'm saying. That's a factor in that, too, I think. But, yeah, I think the other thing that's kind of diverted the attention up here is this, the soccer team has played so well and gotten off to such a great start, and it's such a fun story that I think a lot of people are just kind of paying attention to that. And, oh, well, baseball's playing. Okay, well, we'll see where they are in July, you know, or August. So I think that's why kind of people aren't really panicking about it right now.
Well, you say panicking. In your opinion, given the set of circumstances that exist now, where do you think the juncture of the season is that the Cardinals have to make a definitive decision as to be buyers, sellers, or what to do with this team? Where does that...
Around the All-Star break. I think they've got a stretcher coming up. I mean, they've got the Giants for three starting tonight. Then they go on the road to New York and Washington. And then they got the two games in London against the Cubs, which is still going to be goofy. And then you come home, you got one day off after playing those two games in London. You put three against the Astros and three against the Yankees at home. Mm. So that gets us right to the 4th of July. So let's, you know, see. And then they got a week to go after that until the All-Star break. So I think that first week of July, once they get past this stretch, see where they are, once they realize the All-Star game's coming, then kind of you'll have 2 or 3 weeks before the trading deadline to kind of really figure out what's available, what you're going to do, and are you going to buy, are you going to sell, are you going to probably, in my case, in both cases, probably do both. They probably will try to move some players who are going to be, you know, free agents at the end of the year, or that they already know that they probably are not going to bring back for 2024, and then try to reload and see if they can get some guys that they can count on for next year and beyond.
Who are the pieces not named Tyler O'Neill that you could see moving? And then is there a chance that Goldschmidt moves if they're not a contender?
There's a chance, but he's got no trade, and I just think he's happy here, and I don't see that happening, especially – to me, that would be a trade that they would make over the winter, not necessarily at the trading deadline, unless somebody were to really, really overwhelm him. I think he's happy here. His family's happy here. I'd be surprised. You never say never, because you never know what other teams are going to offer you or what he's thinking internally, because let's say he doesn't talk about that stuff a lot. So I'd be, I mean, it's going to come up, but I would be surprised if anything happens there. Well, you look at the guys who are free agents at the end of this year. Jordan Montgomery's number one. Jack Flaherty's number two. Jordan Hicks is number three. You've got Young's got an option on his contract after this year. I think you start with those four, and then you try to kind of figure out where you go after that.
You think they would be willing to deal a guy like Flaherty or a guy like Hicks?
If they don't think they're going to re-sign him, if they don't think that they're going to enter into their plans for next year for whatever reason, money-wise or performance-wise or whatever. And again, it depends. Not trade them just to trade them, but sure. If you could get something that you think you could get back that would be better for next year than what you've got right now, I think you have to talk about it.
In visiting with those guys, do you get the opinion that they are considering free agency or would like to re-sign with the Cards?
The only guy who really has talked about it is Montgomery, and he said that was back in spring training, and he said he was open to talking about a new deal and extension in spring training, but he didn't want to talk about it once the season began. Then once the season began, he would be committed to go to free agency, and apparently the Cardinals had no interest in talking to him about it during spring training, so because he said it never came up. So the other couple of guys that I talked to about it really kind of declined to offer their thoughts. So
that may lead you to think one way or the other with them, too.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think the performance of the team dictates that a little bit too, you know. I mean, I think that they're, as I say, everybody's disappointed with how the season has gone. So, you know, they think they're going to be better off somewhere else. It's hard to say. It's going to be an interesting, 6 weeks or so coming up, that's for sure.
Does the DeJong situation kind of hinge on whether Mason Wynn's ready? Because last time I looked, he was not lighting it up in AAA. I mean, is that
If you look at his splits, though, the last two or three weeks have been a lot better.
Okay.
You know, he started off slow, but I think the NIL had the numbers right in front of me. But I know that he's been has been playing much better the last 2 or 3 weeks. So I think they think he's getting close. And again, that kind of if you're 20 games out by the All-Star break, just for example, then what's the harm in bringing him up and letting him get his feet wet and be ready for next year? You know, so if you think he can hold his own up here and not get buried, DeJong, you know, when he came back, he played really well there for a while, but now he's back in a slump again. I think I figured it out after yesterday, 6 for 53 in his last 15 games, and 5 of those hits are singles and 1 RBI. So, I think 17 strikeouts. So he's back to being, you know, the unfortunate guy who can't get a hit like he has been for the last 2 or 3 years. And part of why he's still playing, I think, is because they've, you know, made the commitment to move Edmund to center field right now, at least because of the injuries in the outfield. And he's actually, I have to say, I've been surprised by how well he's played out there. You know, he looks really natural and can go get the ball and, you know, not afraid of the wall. And he's just done a great job. So, you know, that's been one thing that's kind of been interesting the last week or so, 10 days or so. So with that being said, if he's in center, then DeJong's really your only pure shortstop on the team. And Donovan can play there, but I really don't think they want to commit to him to playing every day at shortstop. So, there again, that's something. If they were to move DeJong here at some point before the trading deadline, I think their most natural option, unless you move Edmund back to short, is to bring Wynn up.
You headed down here anytime soon?
Sometime, yeah. It's just the schedules have been weird, too. I mean, that's another thing I hadn't lined up this year. Every time the big league club is out of town, it seems like, you know, you guys are in Texas or somewhere way, way far away that I can't get down as quick. So, yeah, if the schedules line up for one of these, I do have a couple of things I want to work on down there. So, hopefully, going to get down there one of these days.
Is there anybody here that they've got their eye on in particular? I asked Ned, you know, Ned does the games on TV, and it looks like the cupboard may be a little bare this year, compared to Jordan Walker and Mason Wynn, but...
They don't have anybody like at that level, or Green, Graceffo, or McGreevy. You know, last year they had, you know, probably 4 of the top 10 prospects in the system were all there, you know, for most of the year. I still think at some point you're going to get Hintz and Jerpy, and the kid that's playing really well at Peoria that they like a lot is Victor Scott, the center fielder, speedy center fielder. He's got 40-something stolen bases, so they like him a lot, too. So if they you know, kind of continue with their tradition of letting those guys, you know, split the year, then I think sometime in the next month or so, you're going to see some of those guys kind of move up from Peoria. They'll probably kind of restock the prospect laden part of the roster a little bit more.
Holler at us when you're down here, will you?
We'll do that. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Rob.
Have a good day. All right.
See Rob visiting with us. Of course, he's a Springfield Kickapoo product, and Rob Raines has done a great job. Quick time out here on the